Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tulsa, Baltimore. We're Baltimore Positive, positively getting you into the weekend here. We have Sail 250. We've got the Heritage Fair in Dundalk, and we just concluded our Maryland Crab Cake Tour, literally for the year, because we work on an annual basis with the lottery from July 1 through. So it's been a hell of a year. I'll recap all the pictures next week for the 4th of July. We had a great, great time up at Greenmount Station, one of our homes away from home, up in Carroll County. Zach Dermer from Farnan and Dermer came by. We hung out. We had some crab cakes. Really, really good time. Luke stopped by. My dude Howard Scherer came by. And, of course, Casper Wells. You'll hear that this weekend as, I don't know, the Orioles return home, Luke, a limp home. I mean, I talk about the defense all year long because, to me, that's the glaring thing. Like, that's when I sat with you and Casper and we did a little round table with Howard over at Greenmount. I'm like, the bad defense, it just doesn't go to sleep. You know, it's like dishonesty in a relationship. It just doesn't sleep. It's always there. And when you're in one run ball games or tie ball games or extra inning ball games or whatever, I mean, you don't have the latitude to give a fourth out when they've already given you a guy on second base. So I don't know. They don't do little things well, which is why they're a sub 500 outfit, period.
Yeah, I mean they're just not that good. I said it to you on Monday on the heels of the Dodgers series, which they won two out of three. They could have swept. They also could have lost two out of three, and their defense was directly related to Friday night's terrible loss and a near blown lead on Saturday night.
Well, the
But
defense is a lot of problems because it opens up innings for pitchers who we were like, well, Dean Kramer's, he's only, Jane Boss can only be so good. But I know when you kick the ball around or when there's even the perception that you might, I'm only saying this because I've been watching baseball my whole life. I'm 50 years into this, 35 years into doing this on the radio. I think this is the worst defensive situation the franchise has been in. Like where I look up and down and say, my God, they don't have one really good fielder anywhere, and even one or two or five wouldn't be enough. If you had five great fielders and four that stunk, it would be enough to eat you up. But when everybody kind of isn't all that good, I mean, Rutschman, I'll and he's not playing. I mean, obviously, but we're going to talk about
right.
Masayu in a minute. But like, I don't look anywhere and say, like, we had Machado here for a minute, and that was, I don't know, he was such a jerky fellow and such a prima donna and such a great player and such a Adonis of everything that maybe we didn't appreciate. Just like he might be the best fielder we had here in this century. You know, like literally as far as you mentioned platinum and all of that. Forget all of that. How about just competent on a nightly basis? I don't think the organization has done a good job of putting that together. And I know you've been all, so has Alan, been all about that for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, they don't value defense. It's just that simple. They have a couple good defenders, and that's it. And one of them was right in the middle of what happened on Wednesday afternoon. I mean, Pete Alonso's played a good first base. I put that play with Aiken at first base. I put that on Alonso. It was a relatively routine ball. I know he talked about it after the game. His read on it off the bat, he thought it was hit a little bit harder than it was, so he wasn't positive that Jeremiah Jackson was going to get there, even though Jackson got there and was in front of the ball, right? I mean, that chopper, he was right there. It was a routine play on his end, but the problem is when you have Alonso take two steps toward fielding the ball,
Everybody's out of position,
and
right?
then you have two guys that are close to first base, but no one's at first base in the way that Jackson knows exactly what the target is, where the ball needs to be, and then the ball
You've
gets
seen
picked away.
circumstances this year. You brought something up like 2 weeks ago where you're like, the play was to run backwards because there was nobody at the bag, right?
Yeah.
Like the fact that bags
Just.
go uncovered in modern Major League Baseball, when my dad taught it in the Colgate
Yeah.
Little League in 1978, like, I cover the bag. I was a catcher. Back up the you back up third base, back up first base. That's your job. Like just in a general sense to be aware. Situational awareness. I mean, dude, that doesn't show up in the box score. Doesn't show up anywhere in your nerd analytics or any of this Saber or any of that. Like situational baseball for these cats, no bueno. I mean, everybody was texting me. You text me in the middle of the game. You never
I
text
hardly
me.
ever do that. You're
Never text me.
if someone does it, it's you texting me. Yeah.
That's how appalled you were. I had
That was terrible.
eight people. Joe Poily, to everybody's texting me when they spit up their lunch at 6:30 in the evening, and it's like, oh, And you just when you and I started saying nice things about them, you know they won two out of three at Dodger Stadium. We're
I
going to be
know they
hearing
did.
about that. We're going to be hearing about that for the next 8 weeks because that's going to be their potential that we say good things about them because they hung in with the Dodgers, they hung in with the Yankees. Yeah, but they don't catch the ball.
Yeah, I want to go back to my original thought though, when you first kicked it to
Alonso,
me.
sorry.
No, I was talking about Monday and on the heels of two out of three, and I said this at the time, and I almost felt bad saying it because I do see some talent on this team. As much as that, hearing them say that has almost triggered a gag reflex at this point in time, because I'm so tired of hearing them talk about how talented they are, or they've shown they can play with anyone. The same stuff that mediocre to bad teams try to say to convince themselves that they're good, right? But I wasn't that excited about the weekend series. I was more annoyed by it. And it wasn't just what happened Friday night, which was a game that they gave away. It wasn't just Saturday, which was a game they nearly gave away. And Sunday, they won convincingly. I was almost annoyed from the standpoint of, you guys played with the Dodgers. Really, you outplayed them for most of the series. And yes, you won two out of three, but I said it to you, and it sounded tongue in cheek. It sounded flippant, but I wasn't insincere because I mentioned, now watch them go and lose two out of three to the Angels. This is
I
so
got you
on
on tape
brand.
saying that, by the way.
This is so on brand for what they are. The way they lost this, first of all, the fact that they lost this series on the heels of what happened at Dodger Stadium, and the fashion in which they lost on Wednesday specifically, that was the most Oriole of Orioles things we've seen of this team over the last couple of years. But I want to humor you with, humor me with something here, because I don't do this normally, but a minute before you and I logged on here to talk about this, I pulled up my Facebook memories, and I thought this transition was very interesting. So 3 years ago, and I don't think it's the exact, but it's within a day or two. 3 years ago, Jordan Westberg was making his major league debut, and we know what's happened there with the injuries. You were extremely fond of him. I am fond of him as a player when he's healthy, all that, but we know how that's played out. But that was 3 years ago. 2 years ago, and this was your headline for our segment that we were doing at the time. Keep in mind, the Orioles, after they won that series in the Bronx that you and I have talked about till we're blue in the face, as far as that being kind of the last high watermark for this team, as it pertains to 23 and the first half of 24. But a few days later, not a few days later, they immediately went to the Houston. They were swept by the Astros and they lost five in a row. But your headline for our piece that we did coming off of, you said that's four losses in a row for the Baltimore Orioles. Doesn't happen much around here. That's what you said 2 years ago. Last year, this was your headline for a piece that we did. I don't even remember what this was about, but this is what you said. As I texted Luke Jones last night after another tragedy in Birdland, the Baltimore Orioles find some creatively interesting ways to lose baseball games. And now we're saying the same exact thing a year later, right? So think about that 3 year progression there, where we know where they were in 2023 and where they were going, and Jordan Westberg was the latest young player to join the fray. And then 2 years ago, the fall of that continued big time in the second half of
Well,
the
Mullins
season.
didn't kick the ball around, and the left fielder didn't kick the ball Hayes, and
But it's more than that, man. You know that. Like, they're not very good at anything. Like, even their
at
offense,
anything,
which is
right?
their strength, and it's their relative strength, but it's not that
They strike
strong.
out a lot and they hit
It's
home
not a
runs. That's
superpower,
right,
right?
yeah.
They draw some walks. They hit for power, although some guys haven't hit for nearly as much power as you would expect. They do strike out a lot. They really go back and forth in terms of runners in scoring position and situational hitting. They'll have a stretch where it looks pretty good, and then it's just bone dry again. I mean, it's just, they're not very good. They just aren't. And we've talked a lot over the last month. Obviously, they had the big homestand in late May, and that kind of got them, at least to the point where their season was no longer teetering. But they were 21 and 29 on May 20th since then. And yes, they've played better, but not much better. They're 17 and 15 since then. On that kind of pace, okay, Maybe they'll hit the 500 mark by September
On
15th
that
again.
kind of
You know what I
pace,
mean?
we're going to be talking about them on July 28th as being in purgatory. Because
Yeah,
they're
I
going to be
mean,
4 games off the wild card, which doesn't sound bad, or 2 games, you know, they're
it's
not
like
going to be
being in the
9 games off the wild card because they're not going to be bad enough and nobody's going to be good enough.
right.
So
It's like being in the NBA where
like being the Pittsburgh Steelers.
it's like,
They're
well, no,
not
it's not
that
even
good.
that
They make
good.
the playoffs,
But
yeah.
it's more like the NBA where, especially now, where you have the top 10, you know, seed 7, 8, 9, 10 do the play-in just to get into the first round. Whereas I looked at it, I think I want to say it was I think it might have been Golden State this past year in the Western Conference. They were the 10th team in the conference, so they were in the play-in. Their record was 37-45, and they were, quote, a playoff
Playoff
team.
team.
Now, it was the play-in, but that's my point here. Like, this is not what fans signed up for. This is not what Mike Elias was advertising 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, right? This is below the bar, and it's below the bar by a pretty wide margin. And no, I'm not suggesting that I'm demanding 100-win teams every year either. But
But how about you not kick the ball around?
this is a sub 500 team. They're not horrendous, but they're not good either. Like, period. They're just not good. I mean, at some point in time, we can talk about all these different stretches of time. We can talk about the fact that they haven't been 500 since April 30th. Last weekend marked the 2-year anniversary of kind of the last time they were truly looking like something resembling being special, right? We can talk about last year. On Tuesday, they hit the halfway mark of the season. They hit game 81, and their pace was exactly one game better than what last year's final record was. I mean, we have 2 years of evidence now, with even changing some variables like the manager, for example. And we'll get to Craig Albernaz in a minute because I take some issue with how he handled Wednesday's game as well. We'll get to that.
Well, we're
But
81 games into this, so I can judge him, right? I
it's
can give
not,
him a,
well, I mean, you can judge him.
halfway report card now. You want to wait for the
Sure.
All-Star break?
I mean, like,
I give
in
him the
this.
John McCain, by the way, for anybody listening on the radio. He gets the John
Fair
McCain from
enough.
me so
But I
far.
would also say how much of it is actually him because these issues preceded him, right? I mean, these issues have been issues before he arrived. Maybe if anything, the last calendar year has validated Brandon Hyde a little bit, at least in terms of like Brandon Hyde wasn't the major problem
What is
here.
he? Is he a coach, third base coach somewhere or something?
He's with the Rays. He's with the Rays.
Rays,
He had what,
okay.
special advisor or something like that. I mean,
But
he's
not an
worked
on-field job, right? Okay, that's
right,
why I
right.
don't know
His
about it, right?
title is, you know, I'll pull it up here in a
Special
second.
something, special.
Senior advisor to the baseball operations department for the Rays, right?
He managed here 6 years, 7 years?
I mean, he
Long time.
2019 through May of last year, right? I mean, and look, let me be clear,
No, I'm just saying,
that's
like,
not me saying
he
Brandon
should be in
Hyde.
line to get a gig. He was a manager of the year kind of guy. Like, he'll work
Sure.
again. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not
Well, I haven't heard his name in
right.
13
No,
months, and I'm
well,
like,
yeah. I mean, that's kind of what happens though when your team starts off as in disaster fashion as
But
last
he'll be
year
the
did.
Reds
But
manager on opening day next year, something like that, I guess. I mean, you
I
know,
mean,
probably.
no
I don't think he's
problem.
done.
I mean, it might be that he maybe has to upgrade to being a bench coach for a year or two, and
Okay.
then, you know, something like
I don't
that.
see him as damaged goods, but okay. Especially not
Well,
now, to your point. We've never had this conversation,
right.
but yeah.
But I would also say that this is not me singing the praises of Brandon Hyde as much as this was something that was much larger than the manager. And that's what I think has been
Well, I
validated at
mean,
this point
really
in time.
lousy ownership is at the heart of
So,
all of it, and the decision making of Peter Angelos and Fredo, and now these two clowns. I mean,
well, I
I
but I but I
like
think it's Mike Elias. I mean, like,
well,
look,
they're the ones that allow him to keep the job
and
and
that's
have the job.
sure.
And
And
that was a decision that was made by Peter 8 years ago and John, right? So, like, he's here because he was in the seat. I mean,
yeah.
clearly Greg Bader and Jennifer Grandal and the rest of this crew, Katie Griggs is the new person in the seat there. All the rest of this feels to me like they've been moving furniture around on the Titanic. And to your point, it's this, you have said this off the air, on the air, in every way. How much has changed from the new owners other than more poor things and charging people more money? I went to lunch the other day, Costas, with someone that I do hope will be a sponsor soon, a person that is from Rosedale. His son plays baseball. I'm not going to out him, and I don't really know him all that well. I've gotten to know him as a potential sponsor, someone I'm going to do business with here. But we got to talking about, I mean, he loves baseball, right? And He's one of the dudes that had a ticket in the first 10 rows that they told him you have to buy 81 games. So in other words, his bill was going to go from 13 grand a year, which is a lot to give the baseball team for 27 games, to whatever it was, 15, 13, whatever his plan was, you know. But he was giving them like 14 grand, and they demanded, you know, 100 basically for him to keep the seats and make him take every game. And I'm like, who's that sales rep? Who's getting on the phone to an Orioles fan? And this isn't Philly, New York, Washington, like whatever. This is like a real dude who's a baseball guy who loves baseball, who spent the afternoon, not, he loves baseball. He loves the Orioles. We're talking ball. He could do my show and do a hat. He knows a lot about baseball. And he's like, I went from 15 grand a year every year to they get zero from me. And I almost acted like we weren't on the radio. F them, and I'm not going to give them money. And that's that. And I'll go when I want to go. And if like, he could not believe the arrogance that he was treated with as someone who paid to watch Rio Ruiz and Mark Trumbo. So like, I am
And who's replacing him? You know what I mean?
not
Like,
me.
it, no,
Like
my
they got
point.
somebody dying to sit in that seat 81 games. And it
I
was
will say,
$150 a throw. He told me that. It was a buck and a half a game he was paying. It was a $600 night every time he went to the ballpark just for the tickets. And they told him, unless you take all 81, we're going to find somebody richer up in Ruxton. We're going to find somebody up in Caves. Like they don't know what the hell they're doing.
which I will say this.
Mistreating me aside, which was dumb. And when I see him, you're dumb for mistreating me, all of you, in front of everybody. I mean, I deal with that every single day of my life. I'm like, but they don't just mistreat Nestor. Nestor has a microphone. They mistreated you in Arlington 3 years ago. I've just seen them. Jim Palmer came up to me at a funeral and tells me that they mistreat him. So part of this really is ownership. And I'm going to continue to go back to, where is Spaghetti Arrighetti? Like, where is he? Where are the people that lead this team when the Nationals are in town and we're doing sales? I mean, they'll come out, do their little papal wave. Maybe they sit for half an inning with Kevin Brown and hand them the questions. I mean, this is not accountability at any level. At any level, on the field, off the field, all the way around, they're a poor, moribund franchise that you and I are subjected to talking about every single day. And I keep waiting for it to get better. I keep waiting for it to get better for other business people, for other fans, and all and then we put the games on. And to your point, they're not a good baseball team. And if that's your product, if the movie's not very good, I don't care if Tom Cruise is in your movie. If the script sucks, you got a bad movie.
Yeah, just to go back to the ticket thing for a second, and then I do want to get back to Wednesday's game because I teased it, what I wanted to bring up,
Nobody's going anywhere. What are they going to do? Go
but it
listen to
comes
the
down,
fan?
but it just comes down to, look, sports are expensive everywhere, right? They're getting more expensive everywhere, right? So that scenario of what you just laid out with someone who was displaced, that happens, and that happens a lot across major professional sports at this point in time. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not defending it, but it happens. But you look at it pragmatically speaking, in order to do that, the game plan, right? The strategy is there's someone to replace that individual, or there's a company, more specifically, probably to replace that individual. Is that happening? Or are you just displacing some of your most diehard, loyal financial supporters for what? For those seats to then sit on the secondary market, right? And probably are ultimately being bought for a fraction of what you're trying to sell them for
Yeah, I had a
on
friend
any
of
given
mine that
night.
got snookered into this, and she was offering her Monday night tickets yesterday all over Facebook, showing the seats and all that. And I'm like, $100. I'm like, I can go to the game for 12, or I can watch it on TV if they let me. And we talked about this at length with our ensemble, with Casper Wells, at Greenmount Station, just how good the game is on TV, how that box on TV makes it a better television show than going to the game, unless you want to socialize or want to be there. You like the smell of Camden Yards or whatever it is, or you like the taste of $15 beers or I mean, I like
Being in
going to
the
games.
perimeter of the stadium, right? What was it that the line?
Oh, no. Let me be a prick for a minute before you get back to real baseball. The Bills opened their stadium the other day. Did you see that?
I
And
did,
by
yeah.
the way, it looks like a European soccer pitch. It's kind of, I mean, all the money you could spend, all the money the guys on Long Island and up at
Sure.
Syracuse and Oneonta are paying for Buffalo Stadium, right, to keep Bon Jovi from moving them to Toronto or whatever. But I watched it, and I watched the press conferences and all that, and all I could think about was that prick from the Ravens. I got to go back and find that press conference, find out who that guy was, because he's some business guy. I might see him at the Maryland party for all I know. But who had the audacity to stand next to Sashi Brown on his first press conference and say that well, we all know the beer's colder inside the perimeter and the hot dogs are a little better inside the perimeter. And all I could think about for the Bills fans, just this is Bills fans. Listen, I welcome David Modell off the boat, to his grave. We talked about tailgating and the experience, and that was who David was. That's why he fought the churches over at 33rd Street to get tailgating, and none of that benefited him really all that much because he was paying the same for parking and the new stadium. It cost him hot dog sales on the inside. David didn't think like that. He was thinking more event community. Let's make every Sunday a Super Bowl, which it was for everybody your age who went with their parents, and tailgating and like all of that stuff that feels like that has evaporated a little bit. But this Bills experience for that franchise, where they are with the mafia and the fans and the tailgating and the tables and all of that stuff, and now they're going to do a night at the opera and charge every fan a premium for the right to a ticket, a premium for a ticket, and then a premium when they walk in. And Bills fans are, and the first 5-11 that goes up, I remember what Orchard Park looked like. Like, people aren't going to want to pay. Remember when the Jets tried to bang their people for PSLs, thinking they had more fans than they did? Like, the PSL thing worked here for a minute and a half, and I was a poor sucker, and I pimped it and all of that. But, like, seeing this perimeter, non-perimeter thing, and
Yeah.
the cost of going over the rope for the perimeter in all of these organizations, I mean, the Orioles invite me. Invite me. Mark Fine has personally invited me, and their chief revenue officer, Don Rovac, they've personally invited me to stay home and watch the game on TV because it's better. And I say that as somebody that likes the game, likes baseball, whatever, and it's free, and the beer's here, and the bathroom's there. Like, they've done to me what Dick Cass was always worried about them doing to everybody for football, which is, I don't want to go to the game. It's so great at home.
Yeah.
Baseball's now, especially when Palmer and McDonald are on. I mean, I'm sure Bader will do something stupid to make it awful at some point, but at least the broadcasts are, I mean, they tried to chase Kevin. I mean, the fact that Kevin Brown still works here is jaw. It says a lot about Kevin Brown, honestly, but I don't know. I've never spoken to Kevin Brown, but the presentation of these games keeps people away. And then there's a Wednesday afternoon where that was the game you could watch, right? You didn't have to stay up till 2 in the morning to watch it. So I guess more people were watching because everybody, I got lit up like a Christmas tree, including by you on Wednesday afternoon, at what people are witnessing when they put a game on before the 4th of July and say, I want to love this team. My God, there's nothing else for me to do this summer. I want to love this team. And yeah, back
Well,
to the
I think,
field for you. I'm sorry. I'm
right. No, it's okay.
rambling today.
But you just mentioned it. I mean, back to the field on Wednesday. I mean, there was a lot to unpack about that game beyond the embarrassing fashion in which it finished. I think you go back to the fact that the Orioles plated 5 runs against Jose Soriano, who's been the ace for the Angels. I mean, they chased him after 3 innings. I mean, Basayo hits 2 home runs. I mean, it's looking good. Trey Gibson got off to a rocky start. I'm not going to sit here and say Trey Gibson was phenomenal, but I'll go back to Albernaz pulling him after 4 innings. I get it. The bullpen was rested. I understand that, right? And they have an off day on Thursday going into this series against the Nats, coming home, all of that. But it really, to me, reeked of, and I'm going to say something that I typically don't say, it reeked of sabermetric auto programming, right? I mean, it felt like it was an instance where they were going to do that regardless of what Trey Gibson looked like in that fourth inning, which was easily his best inning. He hit 97 miles per hour a couple times. He was strong, got a couple strikeouts. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying because he was at 66 pitches that I automatically send him out there to throw 105, right? That's not what I'm talking about here at all. But what I am talking about is you have a starting pitcher who at that point had just really seemed to find his stride. And I get it, top of the order a third time, but it's the Angels, man. This isn't a juggernaut of an offense. In fact, they were resting a couple of their best players on Wednesday afternoon. I mean, the Angels did not have their A lineup on the field. So I don't see the need to rush to pull him from the game because it's this simple. Look, this bullpen's not horrendous, but it's not elite or great or even good. I think
But
at
once you open
best
up the
it's
door to try to get 5 innings out of him,
15 outs, right? 15 outs. That is an extremely long chain to willingly go out of your way to try to do that. Right now, if Trey Gibson was struggling big time in the fourth inning, or if he comes out in the fifth inning and gives up a leadoff single and then walks the next guy, by all means, pull him. But when he had just come off his best inning, he's at 66 pitches. His velo is ticked up.
3-run lead right
He
then?
has 5 strikeouts in 4 innings.
Is it 5-2 then?
5-2.
5-2.
And I hear what Albernaz said. He had Wolfram ready to go against the top of their lineup, some lefties there. He also pulled him after he got 2 outs and then an error was committed, right? I mean, if you're counting on 6 or 7 relievers to navigate the final 5 innings, and in this case, 6 innings because it went to extra innings because the bullpen couldn't hold the lead, man, that's just, you play the odds there, right? What is the probability that all of those pitchers are going to be, quote, on that day, right? There's a good chance at least one or two of those guys, even if your bullpen's much better overall, there's a pretty darn good chance that one or two of those guys are going to be, they're not going to
Ball
be
one, ball two.
clicking, right? And that's what we saw, right? We saw, even though Wolfram was fine, Tyler Wells came in and, had 4 strikeouts in an inning and a third. I actually thought you could have maybe pushed him a little bit longer. Cano struggled. He walked a couple guys, but they avoided trouble there. But then they turn, he turns to Rico Garcia again. And look, I'm hopeful and optimistic that Rico Garcia will get back on track, but he's now allowed runs in 5 of his last 8 appearances. So you had to count on him. And then you had to count on Andrew Kittredge to clean up Garcia's mess, and Kittredge hasn't been very good. So my point here is, if you have an elite bullpen, if you have a lockdown bullpen, like think about what I've used Cleveland as the example a lot
I
in
always
recent
used the
years.
14 Royals, but
Oh,
okay.
sure. Yeah. Well, no, but Cleveland recently, the Royals 10 years ago. Yes. I mean, like the Orioles 10 years ago, right? With Zach Britton and Darren O'Day, and go down the list there. But I don't see enough trustworthy, high leverage depth in this bullpen to try to do what Craig Albernaz did yesterday, or Wednesday.
And to basically to rescue his quad A pitcher, I mean, to say, like,
Yeah, I mean,
we got four out of
well, even
you. Let's
when I
let you
didn't think it
screw
was
this up. But
necessary.
give him a base runner with a 3-run lead.
Yeah, let that right.
He
I mean,
walks the first guy, all right, whatever. But
exactly.
to you, he was going lefty with
I felt
Wolfram,
like he was
top of the
trending upward,
order.
though. Like I felt like it. It looked better in the fourth inning. I
Well,
mean,
again, we go back to, is that his feel or is that Elias telling him this is what we're going to do today? I mean,
yeah, I mean,
and we'll never know the answer to that, right?
and Elias hired him, right? They're going to be in lockstep on a lot of things, right? And that's kind of like the cynical way of looking at it, even if Craig Albernaz has more license, right? And I think bullpen management is something that the field manager still truly does have a little more clout with, rather than talking about pregame preparation and lineups and things of that nature. But yeah, I mean, Trey Gibson had a it was a 2 strikeout, 9 pitch fourth inning. And I get it. It's the top of the order coming up. If you're playing the Yankees, and maybe that's a bad example right now because Aaron Judge is out, even though they haven't had many problems without him even. But if you're playing an elite offensive club, I'll hear that, I guess. But the Angels, that to me was overmanaging and way too much of trying to be the Rays, quite frankly, because I'll say that the Rays do that kind of thing all the time, right? Well, good, bad, or indifferent. And they've had plenty of success over the last 20 years being more of that mind than you typically would see. But I just don't see the justification of looking at this bullpen right now statistically or just the eyeball test. And look, plenty of the ERAs look okay, right? You look at the box score from Wednesday's game. Wolfram's 3-6. Wells is 3-2. Cano's just over 2.
Well, the other
Rico
thing is they're
Garcia.
off Thursday, so he's probably like, well, we'll get
Right.
everybody a little bit of work. We got a
That's
3-run lead. Everybody in
exactly what
inning
he.
here.
Right.
That's what it was, right?
But I just,
How
I
about we win the
felt.
game?
Well, sure. And look, I'm not. I'm. This isn't me saying Trey Gibson needed to throw 100 pitches either. But I just saw a guy that, man, really, like, it was impressive how he looked in the fourth inning, and to just be quick to pull him there. I just and it, and for anyone who's listening, you know, for me, I don't give a you know what about the win in modern baseball, right? Meaning like the win to your
He's got to get his
record,
fifth inning, right?
like right. I don't mean that. Like I care about the win and meaning winning the game. I don't care about the pitcher getting the win. It has nothing to do with that for me. I don't care about that at all at this point in time in my life as a baseball a writer and fan and observer. But I just saw a guy that his stuff ticked up in that inning. It looked really good, and I just that seemed. But I'll also say this. In the bullpen, they walked guys. However, the offense, which had chased Soriano after 3 innings, from innings 4 through 9, they had a total of 3 base runners. How much would another run or two helped their cause in protecting a lead, add on, show some killer instinct? I mean, my goodness, we're talking about playing the second worst team in the American League, and was worth the worst in the, until they won the last 2 games of this series. I mean, the Angels are a bad club, like plain bad. The Orioles are below average and trending towards bad, 1 week and trending towards decent the other, but the Angels are
Well,
playing
we're
bad.
around the corner from this trading deadline and the real future of the organization and the fact that this team probably isn't a playoff team this year either way,
Yeah.
and what Moneybags thinks and what
Purgatory,
these
though.
new owners might. Yeah, and that's
I
a
mean, you
terrible
said it.
place to
It's
be.
purgatory. I mean, it's look, you can
Can
make an
you
argument.
imagine if they trade Gunnar Henderson on July 25th somewhere?
I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, because
Well, then they're not going to sign him, so we're in the Machado
I mean,
territory
well,
now, right? We're getting there.
but there's 2 more years of Gunnar after this, right? Rutschman has 1 more year after
No, I'm
this.
just saying if you gutted a team's, you got their farms. But this is where Elias starts to manage assets,
Sure.
or Moneybags and Arrighetti come in and say we're not throwing a towel in because we've already got pissed off fans. We have to go all in, go further. Here's more money. Here's
Yeah.
more resources. Let's go buy a third baseman. Let's go buy a pitcher. Let's go buy a bullpen arm. Let's come on.
I'm
We'll
just
be that. We'll be
completely
that
unin.
last wild card. We'll be that last wild card, and we'll shock the world.
Yeah. I'm just, it's you, what you mentioned, that could happen, right? It's baseball, man. I'm not going to sit here and say that. I mean, the Orioles mathematically are still right in the thick of the wild card race. As mediocre, as bad as the American
They
League
will be the
looks,
first ones
it's
to
the
point
truth.
that out to you.
Sure. But I guess for me, it's just I am so unenthused about any of the options, right? I don't want to see them sell from the standpoint of what that, especially if it's a full extreme teardown that you would just, and I'm not saying you're suggesting they need to do that, but is there a non-zero chance
I'm
of trading
suggesting that
Anthony
Mike
Rutschman?
Elias shouldn't be the guy doing it if he's not going to be the
But
guy
I get,
doing it. And if
I
I
hear you.
own the team, that's what I would be thinking about. But I would also be thinking about a work stoppage at the end of this year
Sure.
and where I want to position my franchise with
I'm
Mike
just.
Elias as the general manager going into purgatory, going into hell. I don't. I.
It's just
It's complex. It really is complex.
there's no option right now that's appealing to me whatsoever. Right? There just isn't. I don't. They're not good enough. They're not really so bad where you would definitively say sell, sell, sell. Like, and we're not talking a fire sale here. And I would still say, even if you're going to entertain trading Gunnar Henderson, okay, Adley Rutschman's a little bit of a different story because he's a free agent after next year. But anything like that, I would still like, even if you're going to do the extreme thing and say, we need to talk about Gunnar, that to me would be more of a winter thing anyway. But to your point, there's a work stoppage, and who knows what's going to change. I mean, maybe you come out on the other end of this of a work stoppage, and there is a salary cap, and Scott Boras is now having to talk in different terms
Well,
with
and if
his
that's
top
the way they
five,
feel, then
right?
they will purposely
But
not make those kinds of
sure,
deals with their better
but
players.
I guess for me, there's no path here at this point in time with this team, with this organiz, with this leadership, with this club, with the farm system, which has good depth as it pertains to like solid prospects, but there aren't like elite guys that are in the top 15 in all of baseball at this point in their farm system because so many of those guys graduated, right? I'm not even blaming them for that, but like I just look at all of it and any of these options, including doing what a lot of fans want to do right now, which is fire Mike Elias, clean house, all of that. You also know what that probably means, right? That probably means another rebuild going through, maybe not as extreme as this most recent one they went
Yeah,
through
but you'd hope
to
I
be
had.
five games under 500 next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, but like, does anyone, I don't have the, I'm at the point
Well, and they're a
where,
rudderless ship. I mean,
yeah.
when it comes to Arrigetti and Rubinstein, who are zeros, and Katie Griggs, who's off on the
Yeah.
farm,
I mean,
and
like,
Elias, who fires his manager and hides for 4 days, and a year later, hides, it's pretty good. A year
the
later,
same
still here.
problems.
Same
Yeah.
accountability problems. Emptier stadium, emptier soul. Just more tick-tock on Rutschman and Henderson and
Yeah.
all of these guys. And it's funny. I just want to be a glib and be mean for a minute. But you mentioned that they're you don't know whether to buy or sell whatever there is. Do they stand pat? I wouldn't sell Henderson. I wouldn't get rid of Rutschman yet. I would come back. I would do all of that stuff. And it's like none of this is working.
Right.
So
Like, what's the path that's actually going to lead to what you want?
I don't have any confidence in the humans at the top of this to
And
pick
that's
the next
fair.
Mike Elias. But
I guess
for you
for
to pick on their talent and them to say, "Well, we're so talented, we're so talented." To me, the flipping part of that is Gunnar
maybe they're
Henderson
not that talented.
or Adley Rutschman saying, "Do you know how bad this team had to be to get someone of my talents? Do you know how many games we had to lose in 2018 and 19 and 20 and 21 so that I could be here and hit 220 and strike out 3 times a night?" I mean, that really is the bougie of all of this, which is we're going to burn it down to the ground and we're going to build it back up. Maybe if it works
Yeah.
out, maybe if these guys are and stay healthy, maybe if we
Worked out
don't
for a
draft
little
pitchers
while.
because we can't draft pitchers because their arms fall off. So let's not do that. So all of the philosophical things about where we started 30 minutes ago, which is they don't draft defense, they don't value defense at all, and in circumstances like Wednesday, that cost their pitching, their offense, their defense, their manager, their face, and ultimately where they are in the standings.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and you just touched on it. Nothing's good enough. The weaknesses are very glaring, right? The strengths are not that strong, right? To the point you just made, I mean, they valued drafting hitters and more so college hitters, right? And you still look at what their offense is. I mean, they had Leody Taveras hitting third on Wednesday afternoon. Now, I don't mean that as a jab at Leody Taveras. You know, he's been a nice story this year. You know, he's not a center fielder anymore. My goodness, they had to play him at third base on Monday night. I mean, there you go again with another thing that has mystified me over the last few years, their insistence on playing shorthanded. And I get it, Holiday pinch hit on Wednesday. I guess he's okay. But
You're a major
they,
league team putting an outfielder at third base and say, "Here, go get him," is.
especially hours earlier, Nestor, they had activated a third catcher on the roster. Chadwick Trump was back on the roster for and hasn't played yet. They had Leody Taveras playing third base on Monday night in an emergency situation. I mean, if Holiday was unavailable, that's fine, but make a move to make sure you're covered there, that if you have one injury that you're not throwing up your hands and you know, pulling something embarrassing. You know, it worked out. It was humorous because they won the game and Bradish was great and the offense was really good, but that could have been another instance of
If
their
Leody
defense.
Taveras is playing third base in the 10th inning on Wednesday and they lose because of it,
Yeah,
I don't
and
know
you
we'd
know.
be any more mad than we already are. But I mean, we haven't talked about the actual play late in the game that cost them just what can go wrong and where the decisions are and Alonso and Basayo and all these
Yeah.
guys that they're really counting on. I mean, these are
Yeah, I
two
mean
guys that are.
I would say this. For me, the truly damning play was the play that tied the game, right? The Basayo play, the dribbler down the line, that should he have tried to go to first instead? Yeah, I think so. Am I going to sit here with full conviction saying he was going to get him? It was a tough play. Like that's not the easiest play in the world for a catcher, but it was the 1-2 punch, right? It was the fact that
the previous play happened, and then that happens right
Well, and you
after
can see
that.
the frustration in his soul with holding the ball there, like,
Right.
oh.
So, I mean, it's just not good enough. And I'll go back to, what we were just talking about as far as looking at it from 30,000 feet and where they go, and how I'm just unenthused by just about any possibility. The only one that I hold out some semblance of hope on is if you do make a change at the top and you bring in someone that is able to salvage this, because we all see there's some level of talent, whether it's overrated, unrefined, underdeveloped, whatever,
A
there
lot
is
of
some
teams would have
level of
drafted
ability.
Kolton Cowser and Heston
Yes.
Kerstad and like
And
all these guys,
go
right?
back to the top of that draft, that Kolton Cowser year. Go back to the top of that draft and see what his stats are compared to some other guys that were drafted in the top 10. And you'll see, okay, maybe it was kind of the best option of not so great options, right? And look, you can go through any draft and you'll find someone drafted in the 20s that becomes an all-star. We all have to understand that hindsight is 20/20, big time with that kind of, especially in baseball, right? I mean, it's one thing to talk about the NFL or the NBA where you draft guys that are ready to play right away. Baseball's not that, right? We know that even the best prospects, even the Paul Skenes of the world who probably could go right to the majors are at least going to be in the minors, at least for a little while. But man, I just look at this thing right now, and I'll use a poker analogy. It just feels like they're drawing dead. Like I feel like any of these paths, it just doesn't feel good enough. Like it just doesn't. And you're seeing the same maddening display of, defense breaking down, or pitchers walking too many guys, or the bullpen giving it up. Or I mean, we haven't even talked about it. Tuesday night. I mean, look at that matchup. You and I haven't given any oxygen to the fact that the Orioles were facing an Angels starter who, what, had a 12.83 ERA, and he took a no-hitter into the sixth inning, right? I mean, that was your chance to win four in a row for the first time all year, and your offense no-shows, and Boz wasn't very good, right? I mean, like, that was the latest
Well, it was
example
five
of,
nothing pretty quick.
well, not to the, what, he gave up the two runs, I think it was 3-0, and then point is, the offense completely no-showed, though, man. You know that. I mean, they lost 5-1. It's not like they gave up 13 runs in that game either. It was 2-0, but it wasn't 5-0 till the bottom of the fifth. I mean,
Okay.
it's 2-0 into the middle of the game. That's not insurmountable, especially if you're facing, some guy named Ryan Johnson. I was going to say Ron Johnson, and then I remembered that was a Ravens wide receiver. But point is, that was
I
the
liked his
latest.
look, by the way, man. He had that intimidating glasses thing. He had that
I mean,
thing
I give him
going on.
credit. He pitched well. I mean, like I,
He stepped off the mound
but
with
like it
authority
was,
after he struck him out. He did.
yeah. But again, this guy had an ERA even after Tuesday's game. He's got an ERA of 8.8. I mean, that was just the latest example
Well,
of.
Palmer hazes him at that point. I mean, Palmer, even from the booth is like, "Come on, get a hit. We get a hit this
Oh,
inning. I'll eat a chicken wing or something." You know
I
what I mean?
saw one of my friends on social media said this probably 20 minutes after Wednesday's game,
It was
and it
those
made
cookies. It was the cookies that Melanie was eating, is what it was. Yeah, that's what
it was 20 minutes after Wednesday's game, and he made this comment, and I laughed out loud. His tweet was, "The Orioles are going to make Jim Palmer say the F word on air." And I lost it, because it's just all you can do is laugh at this point. And look, I don't say that at all to, this people are bad.
I almost said the F word in this segment,
I've
which is the
talked
first
to,
time in a long time I caught myself because I
it's
thought you
so
and I were just
funny.
talking for a minute.
I talked to a couple friends after, just friends in my life who are Orioles fans, and a comment was made that the Orioles have had worse teams by a lot, right? I mean, we all
Oh, they
sat through the
have.
rebuild, 1988, 2018, all that. But the comment was, this might be the least favorite Orioles team of my lifetime. And I just think it's the way they play. It is the baked in expectation of thinking there's some talent here. And I still think I don't think they're devoid of talent, but I think it's woefully underdeveloped. And just, I'll go back to Britt Jaroli writing in The Athletic a few weeks back. There was a scout for another team that compared the Orioles to a showcase team. And what I mean by that is anyone who understands the high school and college baseball circuit at this point in time. They had these showcase workouts. And boy, the Orioles have guys that, I mean, look at the ball that Bisaio ripped for his second home run on Wednesday afternoon. Look at the home run that Mayo hit earlier this week, right? I mean, they have guys that do really impressive things. There's no doubt about that in terms of like raw skill. But, you know, I'll pick on Mayo here just for as an example, right? But Kobe Mayo, yeah, he'll hit the tape measure home runs and the exit velo is unbelievable. Guess what Kobe Mayo's splits are right now? Going into Wednesday, so this is, you know, will be updated. You know, I haven't looked at it, but going into Wednesday's game, so just one game off here, against left-handed pitching, his slash line is 304, 361, 750. He's got a more than 1,000 OPS, you know, over 1,100 OPS against left-handed pitching, which is great. His slash line against righties, 141, 212, 225. I mean, you will not find a more extreme splits, you know, platoon splits for someone than Kobe Mayo
And
against
then you just
lefties
say, well,
versus
don't
righties.
play him against right-handers
But the,
ever, and then he'll
right,
never
but
get better, and he's 24 years, whatever he is, he
or
might be a little
but
older
you
than that
start him
now.
against lefties and you don't have an endless bench, and then, you know, a right-handed pitcher comes in. Okay, you're going to take him out right away? Probably not, but then it's an automatic out. They have the same issue with Couser against left-handed pitching, right? I mean, like, you just have such flaws with these players that it makes it difficult to overcome. And then you take into account the defense, or then you take into account the pitching, which has been better overall over the last month. But, you know, even with how good it's been from an ERA perspective, they don't strike people out. So then you're relying on your defense again. And then the defense doesn't make plays and it makes the pitching worse, right? It makes the run prevention fall down. And then you go back to the offense and yeah, they'll have some games like what they did Sunday afternoon in Chavez Ravine against the Dodgers. And you say, wow, it was really impressive. And then what happens a couple nights later? Some guy with a 12 ERA takes a no-hitter into the sixth inning against them, right? I mean, there's just no consistency. There's nothing that this team can truly hang its hat on. All the talk back in the winter about signing Pete Alonso and trading for Taylor Ward and fantasy lineups and thinking about what it would look like. And
And
look,
spending money on Bassett, finding, getting
sure.
Boz,
But the
giving up
offense
first round draft picks
specifically,
for him, like all of
the
that.
offense specifically, right? We debated whether they needed to do more for the rotation, and I think you and I both thought you would have liked to have seen more, right? Whether it was
But
one of
I had
those.
Holiday getting 600 quality
Right.
23-year-old at bats. I had
There was
Jordan
a thought to
Westberg
the.
getting 600. I mean, there was just things in my mind that I thought were more solid than they are, and
Yeah.
certainly. We
And it's.
began with the defense, and I'll go back to the defense. That's the part on the read on this that when I watch it on a nightly basis, when they're giving the other team 30, 32 outs every night, like literally every other inning, something, even if it's not an error, they're
Yeah.
doing things that good, even adequate, average Major League Baseball players' decisions, errors of. My arm's not good enough, and I'm Tyler O'Neill, and they put me in right field, and I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. I don't deserve a glove. Or Kobe Mayo, they're trying to turn into a third baseman. Or Jackson Holliday. I mean, how many of these guys have they tried to hide at third base?
I
I
mean,
mean,
it's
we had Brooks Robinson here. Cal Ripken, you don't hide people at third base. Leody, who wants to play third? I mean, was
well,
this like Walter Matthau and the bad news
I
walking
mean
through the dugout and
that
saying,
was a little more extreme, but to me that was just poor roster
that's
management,
roster management,
right?
right? Exactly. Yeah. I'm
But I
rambling. I'll let you get the
and
final
it's fine.
shot in here
L
because
yeah,
we're going into the
no,
weekend.
and I'll leave you with something I wrote in my 12 Orioles thoughts coming out of this series. You can check it out at BaltimorePositive.com. I've rehashed a lot of it. You know, it's some ranting, but also throwing some numbers in there and everything. And I'll go back to a point that I've made a lot, really going back the last couple of years. I mean, let me be very clear. I do not think an elite defense is required to be the kind of team the Orioles want to be. I'll give you a perfect example right now. Philadelphia, who, my goodness, you and I haven't talked at all about playing the Nats this weekend. Look at what the Phillies just did to the Nats the last couple nights, where literally the Phillies were down to their last strike on Tuesday night and on Wednesday night, and they won both games. I mean, they were down to their last strike, literally won both games in DC, mind you. But the Phillies are bad defensively. Like, you look at their defensive metrics, they're worse than the Orioles, even. But so this isn't me saying that you need to have an elite defense, but unless you do some other things at a really high level. And you look at the Phillies, they've got Christopher Sanchez, they've got Zach Wheeler back and healthy and looking like Zach Wheeler again. Go through the list of everything. And look, the Phillies aren't elite, but look at their record now compared to when they fired Rob Thompson. That is climbing out of a hole. Not what the Orioles have done, being a couple games over 500 over the last couple or over the last 3 or 4 weeks, right? The Phillies, look at what they've done from the moment they fired Rob Thompson and made Don Mattingly the interim manager. But point is, going back to the defense, with very few exceptions, and I just named one, you're not going anywhere if you can't make the routine plays and you can't make the plays in the biggest moments, right? I've said it tongue in cheek, but it holds true. This Orioles defense makes the routine play look difficult and the difficult plays look impossible. And that is just such a damning indictment of what this team is right now. Again, it doesn't have to be elite defense. I can give you all kinds of teams over the years that weren't elite or great defensively. But if you're horrible defensively, unless your offense is amazing, and unless your pitching is amazing, where you strike a lot of people out, you're not going anywhere. And once again on Wednesday, which by the way, was the second time on the road trip, a road trip that was 4-5, that was the second time their defense directly cost them a game. So right there, that's the difference between a 4-5 road trip and a 6-3 road trip. And they very nearly cost them the game Saturday night at Dodger Stadium, right? With Tavares just dropping a ball in right field, that would have ended the game. They still won that game, but when you see that, man, it's disappointing. Because I will say, and I'll leave it with this: their defense had played better for a time. It was playing better. If you go back to probably the second week of May until this road trip, I'd say their defense was trending upward. Not to be good or above average or great, but it felt like it was getting closer to average than poor. This road trip, if beyond just going 4-5 and knowing what that means in the standings and their need to get back to 500, if there was something that was incredibly disappointing, it was how horribly their defense took a backsliding big time with some plays that plain and simple cost them ball games, and they are not in a position where they can afford to absorb that.
Here's Luke Jones. He's Baltimore Luke. We're into the weekend this weekend. I hope to see you down at Heritage Fair, enjoying the good weather. Our friends at Farnan and Dermer put us out on the road. You'll hear Zach Dermer here this weekend. All things HVAC, 410-367-7777. Our friends at GBMC have gotten us out on the road on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I've been giving away the Maryland treasures. The horses have been popular lately as we get to the beach next weekend as well. The Orioles are home this weekend. We have Sail 250 around. Be safe out there. Take care of everybody through the holidays, and we will see you on the other side of the Washington Nationals. I'm Nestor. We're WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Plenty of great conversations ahead right here at AM 1570 and Baltimore Positive.